These brain misconnects because of estrogen being our memory molecule and progesterone, being, I think I've heard it once called like our chill sister, that when we have the ups and downs and the erratic behavior of these hormones, the perimenopause into the early menopause phase, and then the flatlining, the nosedive and the flatlining, we're going to experience these hiccups, these mental hiccups, because we can be so hard on ourselves as women just to recognize this is a mental hiccup and there's a neurochemical reason for it.
The first thing I want to say is I am so glad that you have joined me, that you have chosen to spend your time listening to this podcast. I know you're busy. We're like all midlife women. And I really hope that you gain information that is valuable to you and maybe something that you would like to share and encourage others to listen to. Today, we are going to have a masterclass on mindfulness. I've been a mindfulness practitioner for 10 years. I've worked with so many women, and I know that you say things to me like, "Oh, I don't have time for mindfulness. It doesn't work. I'm not doing it right." And so I've been so delighted that today's guest is going to lift the lid on that. And I'm excited that the three things that you're going to take away from this conversation are that self-compassion in menopause is non-negotiable. Being kind to ourselves makes the biggest difference to how we navigate this transition. The second takeaway is that mindfulness doesn't just down-regulate the nervous system. It can help with sleep disruption. It can address that brain fog. And those I know are two of the biggest issues we have as women transitioning through perimenopause and menopause. Third takeaway I want you to have is that the mindset with which you enter and go through menopause is going to support you or hinder you. And that we can choose to have a positive mindset that will empower you and let you see the opportunities and not just the negatives. I'm super excited to have with me Cara Bradley, and we are going to go deep into mindfulness. And it's very appropriate because mindful.org, which are a big organization, have not only voted Cara as one of the most powerful women in mindfulness, but there's been a big surge on talking about mindfulness and menopause, which Cara is at the forefront right now. And I think that's such a great time for us to have a more in-depth conversation. So welcome to Thriving Through Menopause, Cara. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you, Clarissa. It's so wonderful to be here. I've been admiring your work from afar for many, many years now. So excited for this conversation.
I certainly am too, because it does feel, doesn't it, that the time is right to really have this conversation.
Oh my goodness. I mean, the time is so prime for us women in our 40s, 50s, and 60s right now to really awaken to our changing bodies, but also our changing brains and our changing minds. So that's where mindfulness comes in.
Indeed. I mean, we're sitting right at the heart of Lisa Mosconi launching her book, The Menopause Brain, which maybe those of us who've been around this kind of mind-brain world kind of always knew that menopause was affecting our brains. And your view on that, Cara?
Well, when I started to understand the changes in our brain because of the changes in our hormones, literally blew my mind. And I felt like now I am 59 years old, so I am through it and on the other side of a lot of the chaos. I certainly went down just like many women. And, even though I had all these tools, all this mindfulness training and this yoga training and my whole life I've been in this wellness world, I still lost myself. And when I learned about the changes in our brain due to the changes, the fluctuations in estrogen, progesterone, the other hormones, I was angry at first, Clarissa. I was really, really angry that I didn't know. And it, you know, just behind that wave of anger came this real surge of wanting to share and serve and educate women, not only those of us in our, you know, 50s, but women in their 30s and 20s. I have two daughters in their late 20s, and I don't want them to be in the clouds like I was, not knowing why I was feeling so horrible and really why I was feeling so much not like me.
Yeah. And I can deeply relate to that. And then, and though I had had a meditation practice and practiced yoga, and it still hit me hard too. And the unexpected anxiety that I, and the sleeplessness and some of the low and fluctuating moods, we aren't prepared. And if we don't have simple tools, it can be very hard for us to navigate. And I think we're often just told it's in our heads, or we're handed medication, and there's a real appropriate place for medication. But sometimes we can use other tools, and mindfulness is a great tool, a set of tools.
Yes, and I love that, you know, we're here. We are two women who have been steeped in these practices for a long time, where it's very easy to think, oh, well, they've got it all together. And, you know, I'm right there with every other woman. Like, I really want us to recognize we are in this together, and you're not alone, you know, because I felt very, very alone. And I felt like I couldn't share how I was feeling very easily. So my mission is just to help women recognize there is this huge wave, which is so exciting, of women talking about menopause and really demanding answers and demanding research. So it's a wonderful time to be a woman right now, I believe.
I think so too. And I mean, I think we're all looking at the amazing budget that Biden has put forward now. I mean, that's a phenomenal, huge amount of money. It's $12 billion towards women's health, and menopause is in there, in the mix. And that's a real step forward for women's health. And we're seeing all this conversation about women's brains being different, which is, you know, it's so logical. It's so obvious that, you know, the role of estrogen, which actually in 2015 was an academic paper. Brinton wrote the paper in 2015, where she showed the estrogen as the master hormone of the brain, showed it working, how things happened, and nothing was taken up then. And now, I mean, it's taken almost 10 years for us to really go, oh, yes, yes, it's affecting our brain and we're not going crazy.
Yes. Yes. And even going back a little further, when I first dove in to start researching my own mind, my own brain on menopause, I found a book by Dr. Claire Warga, and she wrote this book in 1999. And I think that's where some of my anger came up, because I couldn't believe this book was 20 plus years old and I had never learned any of this. And what I love about what Dr. Claire Warga named, and the book I believe is Menopause, Your Mind on Menopause. Yeah. And she talks about these misconnects, these brain misconnects, because of estrogen being our memory molecule and progesterone, you know, being, I think I've heard it once called like our chill sister, that when we have the ups and downs and the erratic behavior of these hormones during the perimenopause into the early menopause phase, and then the flatlining, the nosedive and the flatlining, we're going to experience these hiccups, these mental hiccups, she calls them, which I just felt like they were so sweet, and to call it that, because we can be so hard on ourselves as women, just to recognize this is a mental hiccup. And there's a reason, there's a neurochemical reason for it.
Yeah. And I think when we realize that, we have an opportunity to do something about it, haven't we?
Precisely. Yes.
Yeah. So maybe we should talk a little bit about mindfulness. Maybe first of all, maybe a little bit about what it is and what it isn't, because I sometimes, and maybe you do too, people think, oh, it's I have to sit and meditate for a particular long period of time and I haven't got the time, or I've done it and I failed. I've heard that as well, even though you could never fail at mindfulness. But Cara, for my listeners, and bring that into a sort of what is mindfulness and what is it?
Yeah, it's such a great question and I appreciate you asking. I know you know the answer, but it's one of those elusive terms that can be very slippery for people. And again, another opportunity for women to feel ashamed. I don't practice mindfulness. I am not mindful. Mindfulness is simply our ability to know what's happening right now in the moment, to recognize, this is my life right here, and to not place judgment on what's happening, but just to sit with the present moment. And again, even those words can feel slippery for people. And so I like to offer this way of being mindful as really just showing up for what's happening as it is right here, right now. With the, as I sit here in Maine, in the U.S., I'm looking out at snow, if you can believe it. We got snow the other day. And it's an ugly gray day, but this is the reality. This is what's happening. I'm mindful of how I feel in this weather. And I'm not going to beat myself up for wishing that it was warmer and the spring was out there. But so being mindful is really showing up moment to moment without this judgment of ourselves. The practice of meditation is the formal way of building our capacity to show up more often. We forget. We speed by our lives. We speed by what's happening because our busy minds have been conditioned to jump around like an untrained puppy dog. So the practice of meditation is different than being mindful in the moment. The practice of meditation is in many ways, and you may have heard it referred to as, you know, your gym, the gym for your mind. It's where we practice our reps, where we actually pay attention in a very controlled way of where our busy mind is going and what our busy mind is so busy doing. So we practice mindfulness, or we can be mindful moment to moment as we eat our lunch, as we drive our car, as we listen to our partner, and we can build mindfulness in meditation practice. And it can start 5, 10, 15 minutes. I think generally the research is about 15 to 20 minutes of meditation done consistently for about 20 days can really help us build that strength.
Yeah, I think that is such a beautiful way to sum that up, that we can be mindful at any time, but we do need to train our minds to be mindful. In a sense, because we have so much distraction, so much choice, so much busyness in this world, that it isn't easy to just be mindful, because our brains are, I think they're overloaded. And I think women's brains are particularly overloaded because we're doing so much and think we have to do so.
Yes. And, you know, there's that word that we hear over and over again is overwhelm. So many women and men and children and teens feel overwhelmed by the amount of information, the noise, the to-dos, the schedule, it puts us into a state of chronic stress. And I think it's one of the most important reasons why we want to start paying attention. And, you know, I wrote a book about this is simply helping us becoming aware to become aware and to become familiar with what our busy mind is doing. What is our mind doing moment to moment? When am I not mindful? And I think it's a great question. I ask myself this all the time because still there are times when I'm not mindful, when I find myself running away from a conversation mentally, or I find myself, snacking a little bit too much, because I'm not paying attention. So there are times throughout the day, even if you're practicing meditation, you can still catch yourself and will catch yourself not paying attention and speeding by what perhaps your body, which is, I think, an important topic for us to talk about, yes. what your body is telling you, or yes. what somebody else is telling you, or what the road is telling you to pay attention, pay attention.
Yes. I think that is so true that we aren't mindful all the time. And it's actually quite hard to do that. You'd have to put a tremendous amount of effort all the time in. But being a practitioner of mindfulness, someone who has that in their lives, we are able to bring ourselves back when we've drifted off, as you said, not listen to someone, put our hands in the cookie jar when maybe it wasn't quite the thing we should be doing. Or we've skipped exercising. And instead of beating ourselves up, we're going, okay, I forgot that. But in a gentle way rather than a judgmental way.
And that's a biggie. I mean, that the kindness to ourselves, especially women, I just find we are so hard. I learned this beautiful practice from my meditation teacher, Scott McBride. And he suggests that when we catch ourselves not being mindful, when we catch ourselves with the hand in the cookie jar, is to put our hand on our heart, either physically or just even mentally, imagine, and just say to ourselves, there, there, sweetheart, there, there. Yeah. It's okay. I caught myself not being mindful, there, there, it's okay. Now I'm back, now I'm back, now I'm back.
Yeah, that's so beautiful and kind of mirrors the work that I learned from Christopher Germer and his book, The Mindful Path to Self-Compassion, which was hugely supportive to me in menopause. I think I used to read it at lunch times, go out in my lunch break and just read a chapter of this, do the practice. And it was similar, very simple ways to be kind to ourselves, to forgiving ourselves when we haven't done either, what someone else thinks you should or what we're ingrained to think is what we should be doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I have been really looking at mindfulness and menopause quite a bit in the last year, at least, if not more. And I think it can be hugely helpful for us as women to really understand the messages coming from our body and to be very, not only aware of it, but to name it. Very powerful to start to name what we're feeling and not to be ashamed of some of the symptoms that we're feeling because we haven't been trained. I mean, I asked my mother, what her menopause experience was like. She's 87 and she just brushed it off. She's like, I don't know. It was fine. I'm like, Mom, thanks. Thanks for that.
Exactly. And I think what you're talking about is how we tune into ourselves and maybe talk a little bit about for the listeners, how they would actually begin to do something like that.
Yes. So I wrote this series recently for Mindful, as you mentioned earlier. And so there's an article that describes this very simple three-step menopause and mindfulness practice. And I have to be honest, it was developed for my own sanity, for myself first. And so the first step is to name it. Name the symptoms. There are some great resources out there with, you know, the 87 symptoms, the 200 symptoms. I mean, all of the symptoms that we may be feeling. And go through some of those lists and name what you're feeling. Is there something very powerful about naming what you're feeling physically, emotionally, mentally, and even in your social connections and professionally? Because we know that menopause in the workplace is, one in 10 women are retiring early because of these symptoms. So, you know, just to give you some examples, for me, if I were to name my symptoms, let's say 10 years ago, it would have been sluggish, irritable, foggy, tired. A big one for me was lack of motivation and lack of confidence and lonely. I started to feel like I was aging out of my work as a teacher, as a coach, as a consultant. And so those were some of the things that I, you know, now know, but it would be really helpful if I would have named it then. So the first step is name it. The second step is to examine it. Examine it with that blanket of loving kindness around you. You want to just absolutely bathe yourself in love and support for yourself. And so by examining it, you can go down some rabbit holes. Why am I feeling so irritable, you know, at 49 years old? What's going on? Oh, look, there's, you know, new information about my brain in menopause. Go down some rabbit holes. You don't need to, you know, do all your symptoms the first day. Pick one or two. And then the third step is to take some action on one or two of those symptoms. And again, we don't have to tackle everything at once, but perhaps it's brain fog. And that's something, you know, I was really interested in. Do some scrolling, you know, what's happening with our brain on menopause. Dr. Lisa Moscone just came out with a phenomenal book, The Menopause Brain. We can start to learn about some of the ways, including mindfulness, including exercise and nutrition and things that I can do to manage this brain fog that is all of a sudden changing my life. So these three steps, very simple. The first is to name it. And this is all part of the process of being aware. The second is to examine. And the third is to take some small action on one or two of your symptoms.
Yeah. And that's very simple. And if we think about that, we're not saying to somebody, you have to do this and start doing a breathing practice and this and that, because, and that's quite off-putting for many people and not always helpful if you've never done that sort of thing before. But we're just literally, as you say, calling it out. Looking at what's happening. And I think maybe within the examining it, we're surely also learning some of the triggers that are going on. Maybe begin to think, oh, I'm always having a hot flash when I've drunk coffee or alcohol or something. So we begin to think and make associative links to here it is, when does it happen? And we can go deeper and deeper. And then we can say, what can I do? And I think what it does, doesn't it? It gives us back a sense of agency.
Mm. Yes. It's very, very empowering to prioritize our health, to prioritize not only our physical health, but just our spiritual health, our mental health, our emotional health. When women put themselves first, and how we are feeling physically and mentally, emotionally, we do everything better. Everything gets enhanced. We just haven't been conditioned in our culture to really, really prioritize. It is not selfish to sit with yourself in the morning and to examine your changing body and changing mind like this.
No, it's just not what we've predominantly done. I mean, some people obviously have, but and I also think that when you do this practice, Kara, you also have a better ability to have a conversation with your clinician, with your partner, with your employer, because we're not coming in a rather sort of flustered, chaotic state and you're trying to name every symptom you've ever experienced, but you're coming a little bit focused and they're potentially more able to help us, aren't they?
Yes. It is amazing what happens when we start sharing. And this, I think, is what's happening now. In our generation, we are sharing our experience, just like we shared our pregnancies, just like we shared our periods when we were teenagers. We're now sharing our experience, which this is what's going to change the conversation.
Absolutely. And within that, we do like to keep conversations positive, and that there is often, and I was talking yesterday with Professor Joyce Harper, and she was saying, I'm interviewing women in focus groups and the negativity is intense. So as a mindfulness practitioner, we're often aware that there is this negative narrative and that turning to the positive can be way more empowering. Kara, how do we do that so we get out of a negative spiral into something that is more productive, more positive, more growth-oriented?
Yes, it's such a beautiful question. It's interesting. I've had this conversation with several of my friends, girlfriends in their 50s, early 60s, and we are all feeling more empowered now than we ever have. Wiser, more grounded, more centered, more truthful. And I think, again, it comes through us sharing and inspiring each other. That, in fact, you know, I'm turning 60 in 2 months. I can't believe it. And what I keep saying to myself is, because I really believe the 60 is the new 40, but better. Yeah. It feels better. I don't want to go back to my 40s. I love where I'm at right now. I just went silver with my hair and I feel great. And this is where we want to inspire each other, not to have to look like we're 40 again, but to really grow into our wisdom and to be able to share with women of all generations. And I think the best is yet to come. So if we could have those empowering conversations, yes, we need to talk about the symptoms, no doubt about it, because we've been suffocated and silenced for so many years. But on that flip side, and I think this is what's coming, Clarissa, with this wave, is this sense of empowerment and confidence in women in a way that we really can lift each other up in a completely new way. And to be honest, this is what inspires me to do this work, because I truly believe that when women in their midlife start to own their power, we will change the world. We will change the energy of the world. We will shift this, you know, hate-based world into a love-based world, because that's the way we're made. That's how we're made.
Yes. And I do think that there is a shift in the conversation from it being entirely about negative. And we do need, as you say, to talk about symptoms. We, for a long time, said nothing. You know, women never spoke about it or they whispered about it. But being able to talk openly, then after a while, you can't just talk negatively about it. You could talk about it openly is a different thing. Yes, I'm 64 this year, and I am just loving this era just as much as you are. You know, this is a great time to be doing work and working with women and opening up these conversations, as you said, to women who are much younger than ourselves, as well as women who are part of our own age group.
Yes.
One of the things we've touched on there quite a bit, and you mentioned brain fog. Brain fog, as, you know, I interviewed Dr. Alicia Jackson here, and we talked quite a bit about just how prevalent this is. And they obviously did an amazing survey, 100,000 women in the Evernow survey, and brain fog was up there with 75% of women saying that at some stage they are experiencing it in perimenopause and early menopause, very debilitating. What are some of the solutions that mindfulness can bring to brain fog?
Yes. Wonderful question. And so many women experience some aspect of brain fog, which can include, you know, just lack of memory, lack of ability to speak clearly, forgetfulness, this irritability again, just the mental fatigue, the lack of ability to focus for long periods of time. So just to give you all a little idea of what it may feel like to have this brain fog or this hormonally related brain fog. The first thing that mindfulness can do is to help us just become aware of it and name it. Again, mindfulness is becoming, paying attention to what's happening moment to moment. Our bodies are telling us something. Oftentimes, the brain fog is simply a matter of not sleeping enough. When we don't sleep, when we don't have that deep sleep, the REM sleep, our body doesn't have the ability to heal itself, to cleanse itself at night. So we wake up with brain fog, whether you're male or female. So, you know, sleep and prioritizing sleep is so, so important. So how does mindfulness step in? Well, when we start to pay attention throughout the day, we will start to notice when we are in a hyper alert state or stress state, and when we're in a relaxed state. I mean, what we can become aware of, like right away, you know, as soon as you finish this podcast, is to start to just pay attention and notice, where am I? How do I feel right now? Am I even breathing? I mean, just finding our breath and balancing our breath and breathing deeper helps to regulate our nervous system, which then it's like it spirals out into regulating our cortisol levels and allowing our gut to digest and allowing our muscles to relax and allowing more blood flow to the body. So paying attention to what my body is telling me, how I'm breathing, where the tension is, what I'm thinking about. I mean, it sounds like it's a lot, but our brilliant minds can scan that all in a matter of a second. And so the reason why we practice formal meditation, and a formal meditation can be a seated, guided meditation. It could be a body scan. It could also be a yoga practice. It can be sky gazing at night, just looking up at the sky, or walking in the forest and just noticing, where am I? So, you know, my work has always come from the body up, right? So our bodies and our physical biology is really driving how we feel mentally. So I'm always going to my body first. And there's so, it's like a plethora of conversations happening all at once, especially, you know, during this time of our lives. So you don't have to try to tackle it all, but maybe it's just, where's my breath? How am I breathing? And when you start to do that throughout the day, and you can use, I know a lot of mindfulness teachers, I think it was Thich Nhat Hanh who often taught thresholds. When you're moving from one space to another, use that as a reminder, a gentle reminder to check in with your breath, with what you're doing, what you're thinking about. So whether you move from bedroom to kitchen or car to office, you can start to use those as little alerts, gentle alerts to show up for yourself. And this is how we can, and it brilliantly happens over time, you know, day after day, you start to live in a more regulated or coherent state of being, a more balanced state. And you start to notice when you're not balanced. And this is mindfulness, is noticing when you're not paying attention, noticing when you're not in your body, when you're not observing, when you're not listening, when you're not doing something. It's just noticing that and just gently, as you would a little puppy dog, just bringing yourself back to where you belong in your breath, in your body, in this moment, with your hand on your heart.
Yeah, so beautiful. And I agree. I love those thresholds. You say to people sometimes, you often have maybe 5 minutes between these horrific back-to-back meetings, which way too many of us have in the office space. Those are moments that you can stop, breathe, check in with yourself, and just think, how am I now? Am I clearing out of my head all the things that went on in the previous meeting? I'm centered, and then I can come back into the new meeting and pay attention in that meeting.
Yes. And it sounds simple. And John Kabat-Zinn said, right? It's simple, but not easy, right? Yeah. It sounds so simple. And everywhere we go on social media, on our feeds, in the news, the bookstore, we see these simple practices. I mean, everybody knows them at this point. What is really, really important to remember is they work. They work. Breath practice works. It's free. It's accessible. It's always here. So if we can start to trust that even 2 minutes of silence, as a study was done in Finland, 2 minutes of silence can help us shift, you know, our the state of our nervous system. Simplicity is right. It's right there for us. So start to trust that your body, given the opportunity, will find a more balanced way of being in a matter of minutes.
Because it's almost like going back to our default setting, which is to be kind of a bit more grounded, you know, and that we were never, and I love Professor Paul Gilbert's emotional zones. You know, he talks about the red, blue and green zone. We were never meant to hang in the red zone for very long. Yes, we are meant to slam the brakes on if a child runs or a cat runs in front of your car. Yes, there'll be moments when we need to react, but we were never meant to spend a lot of time there. We were meant to be in this calm, grounded or positive action state, which is more the blue zone, when we do things, we're motivated, we do. And then we spend a fair bit of time in this quieter, down-regulated space through a day. And we are more balanced. And I think that's quite easy to think of ourselves as being in different places, different colors, you know.
Yeah, those visuals are perfect. And many people will use the words calm, clarity to describe mindfulness. Yes. It's when our body is calm and relaxed and our mind is awake, alert, and clear. And, you know, many of you listening may say, well, I'm never there, you know, and if you can, again, put your hand on your heart and recognize that we haven't been conditioned to recognize that being both calm and clear or relaxed and alert is actually our natural state of being. It's where we feel our best. It's where we actually perform our best. It's where we're most productive. It's the sense of being in flow. But our society has trained us to be little worker bees. And so we have conditioned our systems to be in this perched or this kind of agitated, this more aggressive state of have to do. And it's in our most amazing states of aliveness, when we feel both calm and clear on the top of mountains, holding a baby, you know, at the edge of the beach, and, you know, quiet pockets in the morning. This is where we belong. This is our most optimal state, is when we're both calm and clear. And so if that isn't a little encouragement to really start to become familiar with your body mind states. I don't know what is. We can be so much happier and so much more productive when our bodies are functioning in balance. And of course, you know, this time during this menopause continuum, as Dr. Jen Gunter calls it, it's not just one day, it's a whole continuum with so much changes happening. You know, if we can just stay on top of how we feel moment to moment, again, being more mindful, we could start to learn how to surf the waves. Again, back to Jon Kabat-Zinn, you know, we can't stop it from happening, but we can learn to surf it.
Yes, definitely. And I think that default position and learning to cultivate that is so important, because we are going through hormonal changes that are in many ways doing the opposite in the short term. You know, the loss of progesterone does impact aspects of the brain, particularly our HPA axis, which makes us very stress reactionary. It can affect our hippocampus, which can make us feel a bit jittery. And then estrogen, less of it and in a different form, it takes the brain time to adapt. So almost like having these practices as real anchors, real props as we go through this continuum is extra vital.
100%. The world is, I often will like to say, we want to become adept at choosing our state of being moment to moment. We get to choose how we feel right now. Even though our body may be in a little bit of chaos, we can still choose to breathe more deeply, to sit still for a few moments, to put the phone down, to, you know, not eat the, you know, as much sugar or alcohol, like to know our triggers. If we learn to choose our state, our optimal state, that is a sense of being empowered. Because if we don't, the world will choose it for us. That's a given. The news will keep coming, and the social media feeds and the work and the emails and the busy schedule will continue. So we want to learn to sit in the driver's seat. And I think at the end of the day, being mindful and aware moment to moment is what keeps us in the driver's seat, making those choices, those really empowered choices.
Yeah, I totally, totally agree with you, Cara, because that's where we have the control, because we don't have the control over the other things that are happening, but we do have the control here.
Yes.
If you had to leave my listeners with maybe your top one or two key things that they could really begin to do today, what would that be?
Lovely question. I think I've said it a couple of times, the practice of loving yourself, not something we're taught, but even a hand on your heart, there's a gesture, and I do it a lot, and it didn't come to me easily, I will say. I really had to work at this, but the hand on my heart, the just nod to self, they're there. You're trying. There. So I would say, number one, cultivating that self-love. And number two, I think very simple, is to focus on sleep. Is to really start to, maybe if one of those things that you examine, you know, would be sleep hygiene and learning what works for you to get a better night's sleep, because there is nothing more motivating than waking up after having slept well. And that will help to dissipate some of the other things that you may be experiencing in on this menopause continuum.
That is so beautiful for the listeners to take those two key messages away and just begin to find ways to implement them in their life starting now, as well as the three steps, which is simply a fantastic way to get started by being mindful in the moment and working with that. Cara, how can people connect with you and the work that you do?
So my website, carabradley.net, and that's Cara with a C. And I'm also on LinkedIn and Instagram mostly these days. I do have some practices on Insight Timer as well.
That's beautiful. Cara, thank you so much for coming on Thriving Through Menopause and sharing your knowledge and your passion of mindfulness and how it can support women to thrive in menopause.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you just gained as much value as I did from that amazing conversation with Cara. The message I want you to have is not just to listen to the podcast and go, oh yeah, that was nice. And it's always been that my guests put together things that are practical and attainable. And that's also partly why I put together my book, Beyond Hormones, which is based so much on the interviews I've had. There are 220 fantastic people and myself have been in conversation. And these are 7 holistic ways. It's about practical strategies that you can use to support yourself in menopause. So if you've enjoyed this podcast, don't forget to like, subscribe, and share wherever you listen to podcasts. I will be seeing you next week, where Laurie Gerber, one of the top dating coaches for women over 50. Until next time, go well.